welcome. It is the Ski Bum Podcast, episode number 332, and it is your pals Mario and Brian. Mario, what's up?
I'm pouring my Après and getting ready for this bad boy because it's going to be an exciting one. We got to wrap up our season.
You said it, man. The main topic this week is the wrap-up of the season for us. I actually was on a guest on our pal Tim from Ski Rex Media's podcast this week. He did a little roundtable wrap-up for the season. And you know what the theme was? Expectations were not met. And we are going to probably talk a little bit more about that in the main topic today. But we'll get to that when we get to that. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. Check us out, skibumpodcast.com. We are on the socials, X, Instagram, Facebook, Untappd, YouTube at skibumpodcast. Do you want to help the show? Do you want to support it? Be a patron. Go to patreon.com/skibumpodcast to join.
Give us a little love, little financial love. Never a little bit of love.
It's almost springtime. Well, it is springtime. It's almost summertime. I hope you've been staying in shape. Hope you got yourself in the best shape of your life for your ski season last season. If you need some gear, if you want to get some dope workout gear, I recommend 10,000.cc, athlete-led design, test, iterate, repeat. Their motto is better than yesterday. The heart of 10,000 is the idea of pursuit in business, fitness, life, and skiing. They believe in moving forward with a quiet dedication to constant improvement and to becoming just a bit better than you were yesterday. Go there again, 10,000.cc. Use the code BSchneider15, one word, and get 15% off. I need to get some new gear. I'm wearing the interval pants. I talk about them all the time. They're like the best jogger workout pants, super comfortable. Clever pockets. And one thing I even noticed today, first time I noticed it, the pants come with the drawstring on the outside. They also have holes if you want to put the drawstring inside. See that?
Oh, that's thinking.
That's what they do at 10,000.
So smart. That's smart.
I recommend checking them out. Lots of different colors, styles, good stuff. So thank you, 10,000. Mario, you mentioned the Après today. How about we kick it off?
It's time for Après today.
So today, I think you would like this. And now, you don't dabble in this area of drinks, not on a regular basis, but every once in a while, it's nice.
Going absinthe.
Actually, that would be good.
Get the little spoon and the sugar, whole jammy jam, you know, whole set.
I'd like that whole idea of making it. Have you ever seen those absinthe, like the big pours where I guess they're made for you, like pouring like a bunch of them, or you have a bottle in there? Like they're very intricate things they have. I like the whole cube with the like the special, like
there's a lot setup going on there. You know, it's like the mixologist thing, and you know, it's not just a pour and done. There's like a whole process to it.
But it makes you feel like a mixologist, but all you're actually doing is pouring the absinthe over sugar on a spoon. But it seems really cool.
It just cracks me up. It's like, hey man, I got some Clorox here, but I also got a spoon and some sugar. We can make a beverage out of this.
That's a party. That's how you start a crack, right?
If you gotta pour things over sugar, like maybe your drink sucks.
If you did that with meth, would you make meth not bad, but it'd be good for you instead? I don't know.
I'm sure there's a YouTube channel dedicated to that.
There's probably a bill up in the house right now about that.
Yeah, right. Exploration. There's going to be a Senate subcommittee, and they're getting $700,000
to study it. Test out is to study this. Yeah. All right. So I'm drinking a Glen. Look at this little bottle.
That is adorable. That's a keisterable bottle right there.
Keisterable bottle. It's a big keister, but it's Glenmorangie 14-year-old. It's their, what do they call it? Their, the Quinta Ruban.
That's the one. Is that the, what kind of cask is that? Is that sherry or is that port?
It is in a port cask finish.
Look at that. See?
So 14-year-old port cask finish.
Damn. Mm. I remember having the Quinta Ruban, but not the 14-year, like the regular standard one.
Ooh, is this is damn good.
Because you're not a Scotch guy.
I am not a Scotch guy at all. I don't know. I'm still not a Scotch guy, but this is pretty damn good. got a lot of cool flavors in it. So I got this as a gift. Like, it was one of those, like, Christmas, we usually don't give gifts, but every once in a while, like, my brother will get stuff, I'll get stuff. This was either, no, I think this was beyond Christmas. I think this was like a housewarming or something, or we had a party, or I don't know. We had some event here, I think, and people brought over. Oh, it might have been like Super Bowl party. I don't know. But family came over and they brought like a, it was like a sampler, and they had like the 14 was the last one. They had like a 12, a 10, something else. It was like a little pack of four, and these little bottles. So those are great if like you don't know, like if you can't go to a tasting and you want to try like something like a 14-year-old or up, if you can find a little bottle like that, I think it's kind of worth it than buying a big ass bottle that you may or may not like.
Yeah, that's a real roll of the dice if you got, especially yeah, something like that. What is like a 14-year Glenmorangie go for? I mean, it's got to be
at least so they're saying, you know, they're saying 58 pounds, which I don't know what that means in U.S.
Glenmorangie 14 Quinta Ruban.
Yeah. Yeah, about $100.
I'm seeing between 72 and 100. Okay, yeah. But again, not like something you just want to drop. If you just want to roll the dice.
Exactly. Like, I don't know if it's great. You and I did a ton of tastings and the
Those were fun, man.
They were like whiskey tastings. I haven't found shit like that anymore. They used to do a big deal for wine tasting too. And I tell you what, like those are really worth, if you do like a whiskey tasting. I mean, if that place is still doing it, I mean, that was great.
Yeah. That place was great.
Whiskey Guild. Yeah. And they used to have a different place that would host, but they'd have that whole, like, there was
Nick
that
and I,
one.
Nick and I did one in New York on a boat, and we got we got so hammered. We got back to Hoboken, and we went to another bar, and we, like, left all of our stuff. Like, all of our glasses and stuff. We just forgot about it.
Ah, damn. Remember when we went to that one, and we thought somebody drank out of that spit thing or something?
Oh, we were so noobs. We did no idea how this thing went.
There's like a
thing. A lot of them, the whole, it's just like wine tasting. People like taste it, then spit it out. And I'm like,
yeah, you don't have to drink them all. I mean, some of them you don't like, you just pour it the fuck out. Like, I don't like your stuff. How about that?
Yeah.
But yeah, this is,
those are fun though.
Hmm. But that's also how you know you like bourbon or whiskey or scotch. Like, and you start tasting the differences, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm usually not a scotch or a whiskey drinker. I will drink whiskey, but certain ones. I'm a bourbon guy. What bothers me usually is that peat smoke in the whiskey. That's what I
can't. In the scotch, right?
In the scotch. Scotch, I usually am just like, ah. So this, you don't taste that as much. It's more of a florally kind of thing. It's actually really good. It's got those little hints of the sherry. You could taste the little sherry oak cask in there. Yeah, it has a good mouthfeel. Not too hot. It's I like it. Now, I can't understand some of these tasty notes that they post online. It's like chocolate with a hint of orange. And like I get whiskey.
I get tasty whiskey.
It does have a nice flavor on the tongue, though. Mmm. Like, very smooth, well-rounded. Like, you kind of taste it all over your tongue. There's a lot of different flavors going on there.
Okay.
And that has a really nice finish. It's not bitter, not harsh. I saw people from around the world. No, it wasn't people from the world. It was this Irish group that does tastings online, and they were doing a bourbon tasting. And it's funny, there was one girl drinking it. She's like, "It's too smooth. I don't like it. It's too smooth.
I want to feel some pain in this drink.
It's got to have some, you know, some hit your gut, like eat your stomach out." And I'm like, that's interesting. So you like that?
So how old were you when your dad left?
What time do you go up on stage?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so this is good. I put over a cube. I'm liking this. This is good. I'm just going to have one, but it's a big pour. That's a pretty handy pour.
It's a couple fingers there. Got two fingers.
Yeah, two fingers, and I drank one, so I had a three finger pour. That's pretty good. Nice. Put a little ice in it. Got a little melt. Got a little water to open up the flavors. Yeah, I'm glad I saw this. So this is part of, I was saying, my goal to clear out the bar. So I do have a bar at home, but I kind of started thinking, I'm like, I want to clear it out and get all new alcohol. I want to rotate the stock. So I think that's going to be my goal, to drink through the bar before getting anything else.
Got to push through.
Like, do you feel like having a beer? No, it's hot out, but I'm going to have a whiskey because I got to drink that shit from the bar.
Dude, like
my wife by the pool drinking like a fucking Moscow Mule, or
it could be like you could be like
Black Russian, because I'm like, I got nothing else in there.
Like the Flaming Homer, just like mix a bunch of shit together and light it on fire and see if it's any good. Right?
That's it. Yeah. Drinking like heavy cream and Kahlua, because I'm like, I got to drink this Kahlua sitting by the pool. Like, you know, it's hot as balls. I don't know, man.
That's a rough one.
One you got to power through.
I've been getting so many ryes as gifts over the last couple of years. I have like seven bottles of rye, which again, I like rye, but usually I make a Manhattan with them. And the higher end ones, which they've been coming out more lately, I'll sip on those. But my wife was looking for bourbon last week, and usually we have some pretty like something around. I realized like I have a bottle of Booker's, which is like barrel strength, probably $90 a bottle, whatever. This other bottle I got as a gift. It's called like King's Distillery from, I don't even know where it's from. And all I had open was Angel's Envy. So we actually made bourbon mashed sweet potatoes with Angel's Envy. Like, that's the kind of asshole I am.
That's what you do.
I mean,
you got to post it. What you got to do is post it on Instagram. Like, Angel's Envy. Look at this.
In my freaking sweet potato, mashed sweet potatoes, I felt really dirty doing it, but I also felt really baller doing it.
But decadent, it's decadent right there.
It's just that vulgar display of power. Just beautiful.
Oh yeah. That's like,
and my favorite bourbon. That's like my go-to. Like anything
that's like going to a party and sticking your dick in the mashed potatoes. Boom.
Again. Yeah.
Again.
Angel's Envy is like, if you put anything in a port cask, like any of those bourbons that are like finished in a port cask, like, that's my wheelhouse. I love those.
Angel's Envy's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, I can't keep bourbon in the house. So I'm down to, so I got these really nice crystal, like Waterford decanters. And I actually started like, because my wife loves having tea with a little bourbon in it at night to finish the day. And I'm like, I love it. And I have it once in a while. Sometimes she'll just have the tea without, and just have the bourbon on the side. I'm like, I like the bourbon chaser to the tea. So she really, like, I love it. But if you think about
bourbon that way,
she goes through the bourbon pretty quick. So I'm like, I got to start refilling. So what I do is I take the bottles, I put it in the decanter just because it looks nice and it's sitting on a bar. And
classy.
But I love the fact that it's moving. I love the fact that we go through it and then we get a new bottle, right? So you see that decanter, it's not like a decanter that's been sitting there. Like, it's used every day.
Is there dust on it?
None of that. None of that nonsense.
Like a Mr. Burns decanter.
So I started running out. So what I started doing is, I have a few bottles that I got as gifts that are kind of cheaper bourbon, not to be a snob, but some of them were even gag gifts, like the Hellcat Mary. Right? I'm like,
Kentucky gentleman.
So I put that in the decanter. She doesn't know what's in there.
Yeah, I think it's Maker's Mark. Yeah, you're good.
So that's how I get rid of that too. It's all going. Everything's going. I'm going to be putting like, I could put anything there. She's just going to pour it in her tea and just be like, I don't know, this tastes a little weird, but it's all right.
Yeah. Good to go.
But like, Contro. Yeah. It's going to be Contro one day. I don't know. See, like, this is very orangey. Yeah, that's a different bourbon.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you mentioned the Contro, and, you know, Grand Marnier is just cognac and orange liqueur. Like, why haven't they done that with other liquor? Like, is there a bourbon orange liqueur mix? Because, I mean, you're halfway to an old fashioned there, really.
You have a lot of rye on hand. Just saying.
I do. Rye
that might be one of those things.
Maybe. Or like tequila. Tequila with a little bit. I mean, you're halfway to a margarita there. Like, why are we not like following the Grand Marnier trend? Like, it seems
you gotta
like
do something. I think you get Grand Marnier. And you may have to sample it with different ones, but if you find the right Gatorade flavor, that might be a home run.
You'd be like, you got to get Arctic Blast and the Grand Marnier. Like,
a purple Arctic Blast and Grand Marnier.
It could work because that Arctic Blast is like cherry flavor. I'm like, I've had it. Like, I always stayed away from it because I'm like, I don't know what that is. It's white. I don't know what the white flavor is. Like, it's white. I don't know. Like, you call it Arctic Blast. That's not a flavor to me. I have no basis to say I may or may not like it. Like, maybe I don't want an Arctic Blast. Like, I don't know. But if you told me
it was... You got blasted in the face and you're like, this is delicious.
Well, if they said it was like cherry kiwi, there's nothing on the bottle that tells you what it tastes like. So it's like, all right, I'm drinking white. I don't know.
Figure it out. Welcome to St. Quentin.
But you get some of that Arctic Blast, a little club soda, and a little bit of drinkable weed. And I tell you what, oh, that's delicious.
There you go.
Put that in a nice, you know, put it in a shaker, serve it to friends.
Did you get that recipe from Martha Stewart?
But you know what's funny is you serve that to friends and they're like, oh my God, this is delicious. What is it? It's very, oh, it's a secret.
You're going to find out in about 45 minutes.
That's right. It's a secret. Don't worry about it. But they don't know what.
I think it's going to get wet.
Where did you get that juice that you put in there? It's delicious. Yeah, it's Gatorade, but I'm not going to tell you that.
That's right.
I got it from Sprouts. Don't worry about it. Whole Foods has a special matcha guava,
latte
flavor. I don't know. It's guava queef.
Ooh, delicious. I love guava queef.
Oh, it's great. It's like a spray of guava queef right in the face.
It's like oil and muff cabbage.
I think can imagine doing that, like if you worked in like a spa or something. Oh, my dear, you look so good. It looked like you had a guava queef. Shampoo, didn't you? Oh yes, it was so great. Yeah, you just fuck with everybody.
That would be good. That's like Impractical Jokers needs like a girl in their tribe, you know, and she could be that. They could just like feed her lines. I could have legs. Yeah,
that could have legs. Could have be legs. Like the coconut bukkake facial.
Which is actually a perfect segue into my outrage today. I'm not even going to lie. It actually is. A few weeks ago, my wife and I, Andrew, my mom took the kids for two nights. And, you know, we're married. We're parents. What does one do when one gets time off away from the kids? We have date night at Costco. We just get to chill. We get to be like...
I'm so glad you didn't say coconut bukkake facial.
No, you thought I was going there.
I was like, oh my God, please don't let up. I'm cringing like a bad movie.
Yeah. So we did our Costco night. And then the day after, we ended up going on a hike down by us, Allaire State Park, got mountain biking with Steve there. Really cool spot. Nice. And after that, I'm like, hey, we just did a nice 3.5 whatever mile hike. I had my 45-pound ruck pack on the whole time.
Look at you.
All I could think about, my motivation to get this hike done, was to go home, eat a goddamn plate of nachos. But before that, to go get a delicious beer. Because what brewery is right by that state park? Icarus Brewing.
Oh, Icarus.
For people who can take lactose, the place is amazing.
There's people in there drinking and people outside. Passing gas, right?
Yes. If you like to get lactosey, that place is, their beers are out of this world.
Get so lactosey. Andrew
and
I,
we went there and it was nice because it was like 4 o'clock on a Friday. It was nice and early. We got a little barrel spot, did a bunch of samplers.
Look at you. Nice.
And usually, I mean, they do, like most breweries, IPAs are their big thing. And again, they lactose them up really heavy, which I personally love. Had a couple of those. They're all really good, but they were all really similar. My wife is more on the porter, you know, stout end of beers.
Okay. So sweeter or not as sweet, but stout.
A little sweeter, probably.
Yeah.
But she chose this Jammy Jam. And I tried it and I was like, God damn, because I too like myself a porter sometimes. And again, speaking of coconut bukkake, this is King Arthur's Steed, which has an oat fluffer.
An oat fluffer.
It's a Baltic style coconut porter, which is oat fluffed.
All right.
So we got
coconut bukkake in there.
Yeah. Baltic porter brewed with Munich malt, chocolate malt, debittered black malts, loads of oats, and then conditioned on freshly toasted coconut.
Okay, debittering. What does that entail?
Pour sugar on it. I mean, that's what I would think when
that. See, bitter,
pour sugar.
Def Leppard. Fancy absinthe thing. Pour some sugar on me. Boom.
That's right. In the name of love. So it's really, you know, malty, chocolatey, dude. Now I would
sweet scale. Very sweet. Little sweet.
Not as sweet as it could be, which is
great. I like little sweet. Little sweet's good.
A little sweet. You get tons of cocoa, tons of coconut. Very smooth. 7.2, so it's it hits pretty hard.
Ooh, that's but good.
This beer is delicious. Have you ever had the Death by Coconut from Oscar Blues?
Yes.
This kicks its ass, and that's probably one of the best coconut porters you can get. This one
that is pretty damn good.
It's so smooth. It's really thick, so it has a lot of like. It almost feels like a, I don't know, like a chocolate milk. Yeah, this beer is. I mean, this is. It's so drinkable.
Nice.
You probably, I don't know if you drink more than one or two of them because they are, they're a lot. They're again thick, creamy, 7.2. But if you're into coconut, you like
that's quarters, like a dessert though, right? You have instead of a piece of pie, have one of those.
Perfect for this time of day. This nice little evening, doing a podcast action.
I looked at debittering. Debittering is introducing something salty, sweet, or sour to naturally balance the taste.
There you go.
So they're saying you soften it, soften that flavor. So that makes sense. They just kind of pop it in there. And
yeah. And before that, I had a Killcliff, the Flame and Joe Rogan one with the CBD.
Nice.
So they had a sale last week because it was 420. They had a 25% off. I got two cases of it. I got a case of Elk Blood. Damn. I got a case of the Flame and Joe. So we're going to be jacked up this summer.
So I had the honor of going to the weed shop on 421.
Oh, boy.
And they gave me the same discounts. Man. Dude, I got like $350 worth of product for $150.
Look at that. The guy I work at the cash register has no idea what
he's like. You got this off. You got this off, man. He's like, are you going to use your points? I'm like, yeah, why not?
No deal.
Okay. So, and they were like, and then I started talking to them. So it's funny, like you talk to the guys in the weed shop and they're just kind of like, yeah, this is all right. And they're just kind of like, you know, yeah, I'm going to give you the information because this is it's all medical right now. They didn't, hopefully after the next election, they'll legalize. It's going to be on the ballot, the recreational, but they're very good at like keeping this, the poker face. Like, cause I went in, dude, I put in an online order that night. You know, at night, the next morning, I said, they open at 9. I was like, ready between 9 and 9:15. I'm like, that's a tough thing. Like, that's kind of shitty. You just throw it in there and like, they got to get in. First thing I got to do is come up with this damn order or whatever. And I know they're not showing up early, right? Like, I wouldn't. It's a weed shop. So I get there at like 9:30 and they're like, oh, yeah. And they're like, I get in there and then they're talking to each other and like, oh, so what would you want? I'm like, you kind of just asked me like a minute ago, like, yeah, I'm picking up an order. He's like, oh yeah, yeah, I forgot that. Like, whatever. So you could tell he was a little like flustered or whatever. So he's talking to the guy. He's like, is that what you're working on? I was like, no, I didn't pick it. And he's like, here you go. And so he goes in the back and it's funny. They go in the back in this vault and they pick the stuff and they bring it out. And it's like, you could just have it right here, but I guess you're afraid somebody's going to what? Like it's weed. You're not going to like, bomb rush and hold you at gunpoint, you're going to be like, hey, man, can I have that? And you're going to be like, hey, man, yeah, why not? Like, that's it. That's all that's going to happen. But anyway, they go in the back in this vault or whatever it is. It's like 9:30 in the morning. And I start fucking with these guys because I'm like, look at this. This is so small. Like, ha, that looks funny in the little mannequin hand they have it in. Like, ha, yeah, that thing's funny. And I'm like, that's a better size. Like, and I'm talking to them about that. And I'm like, how is that strain? And the guy's like, oh, dude, that was great. Like, we sold the hell out of it yesterday. He's like, of course, we were like trying to serve customers and like putting in our order too, because they're like, we wanted to get the deals off. So, like, so they were like, and I'm like, but how is it? And the one guy, he looked like he was still high. He woke up, definitely smokes like the entire day. And he showed me like, he let that game face down and was mm-hmm. like, dude, that is great. Like, it is so awesome. And I was that close to just being like, you're on it now, aren't you? And I was like, I think I know the answer. I don't have to ask. But it's funny. I got like a lot of discounts.
There you go.
Anyway, sorry. That's 421. They said 420. There was a line out the door when they opened. I was like, wow, that's like the Super Bowl of buying weed.
It's.
And they were running like half off. Dude, it was half off weed.
Wow.
Like, not only is it cheap, but like, so for flower, so for an eighth, it is medicinally like $32, $33, right? Cut that in half because they're always running sales. So you're paying like $17 for an eighth. That's a lot of weed.
Yeah.
So then you walk up there like, yeah, give me 8 eighths. You're walking with a pound of weed. Like, and then you start calculating in your head. You're like, I just bought a pound of weed. Yeah, it happens.
Got to do it. 420 deals.
Yeah. And I won't say, like, I've heard of people buying stuff and giving it to other people. It's totally not cool, but
not
you
cool,
know, it man. Happens.
Allegedly, perhaps.
And this is why you buy a pound of weed.
Yeah. Well, speaking of allegedly, perhaps.
Let's go to Ski News.
That was a trip to the gondola.
That was a trip. That was a throwback to the gondola. That's, yes.
If anybody's been listening to us for a while, that was a trip to the gondola.
That was a trip to yes. Ah, the gondola. We miss you so much. Vail Resorts. Tough conditions lead to decline in skier visits.
Damn.
Despite downturn in visitation, Vail Resorts managed to increase its lift ticket revenue and ski school revenue. Vail Resorts has announced its ski season metrics for the period ending April 14th, showing mixed financial results amidst challenging conditions. The company reported a decrease in skier visits by 7.8% compared to the previous year. Despite this downturn in visitation, Vail Resorts managed to increase its lift ticket revenue by 3.2% and ski school revenue by 7%. Dining revenue also grew by a modest 2.4%. CEO Kirsten Lynch said in a statement, given the unfavorable conditions across our North American resorts for a large portion of the season, we are pleased with our overall results, highlighting the stability proved by our season pass program and the investments we have made in our resorts and employees. Retail and rental revenue for North American resorts and ski area store locations declined 7.1%. They said that revenue in North America or results improved in March and April as more snow arrived. However, Whistler Blackcomb remained challenged. They updated the 2024 outlook and said the company will close the financial year around the lower end of the resort reported EBITDA guidance range. Forecast is largely due to the challenges at Whistler Blackcomb. Wow. So it's crazy how much of a impact one resort having, well, I mean, it is a giant resort having a tough season can be. The 7% increase in ski school revenue. I put my kids in lessons for 3 or 4 days this year. And
how much that cost you?
Yeah. Recently at Killington, I had to put Leah in a private lesson because they didn't have anything for 3-year-olds. That was like a regular group. It was $230 for an hour and a half.
Damn.
She's got, and then the guy gives, I mean, this is, I guess their MO is they just give you a business card with their Venmo on it. And they're like, hey, I'm going to throw a little tip my way.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just, that's what they do.
Just worked at $175 an hour. Like,
so for like, a 3-year-old. Didn't
do anything with a 3-year-old. Yeah.
3-year-old. How much shit are you doing with a 3-year-old? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was a tough season, and now, you know, Vail's got to appease those stockholders somehow. So I guess they're, of course, already selling the Epic Pass for next season. So
this is all like, it's funny. This is a corporate statement. So you used to have like, you know, here's what the owner said and a little heartfelt thing and a little, you know, touch your heart, something to connect you and get you out to the, you know, wild. Like, I'm sure.
Goddamn EBITDA now.
Right. You're getting fucking, you got the KPIs mentioned and you got EBITDA. And if anybody doesn't know what EBITDA is, it is a way that companies can manipulate whatever they want to fucking tell you. Because it stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So when you unpack that, there's a lot of places you can hide or play with how that number comes out. And I know this for a fact because I did talk to a CFO for a Fortune 100 company about this. And he was like, oh yeah, we could make that number up at any point. Like we can make it look however we want, but it's usually a soundbite to sway the investors towards a certain area. It's very interesting. But the fact that they even put that in there with no explanation of what EBITDA is, I love it because this is a corporate. So like everybody was saying, and this is what we thought was going to happen. And rightly so. I mean, it is a corporation. They're publicly traded. So they have things that they put out to the stock market, to the shareholders, that it speaks their lingo. So we have EBITDA, KPIs, percentages thrown in there. So usually when I look at these reports, it's like, zzz, and you scroll to what's that bottom line looking like right now.
Yeah. And for the record, Vail's stock price is at $198.33 at the close of business today.
Are we buying it or are we short selling? Which, what's the Brian recommendation? We should do this every
not podcast. Financial advice. Brian is mildly retarded. I wouldn't buy this dog right now. I'll be honest. I mean, it peaked obviously during the pandemic when everyone was working from home and getting their ski on. Right around like October 2021 is they.
So is it sell or hold?
I would sell right now. I mean,
selling.
Short Vail Resorts, man. Because think about it, if
short selling, I love that.
Think about if we do go into some sort of recession right now, and what's the first thing people are going to give up? They're going to give up these, you know, the cost of the ski trips. Not us, obviously. Not you guys listening to this, but you know, the average normie who does one ski trip a year, two a year, they're just not going to go.
So now to short sell, you have to buy on the uptick. And the short sell is what? It's like a promissory note to buy back the stock while it's falling or something?
You have the obligation to buy it at a future time. So at say right now.
Whenever you say. Yeah.
Yes. Well, sometimes they'll margin call you if it starts going up way too much. You just like have to just.
Right. Because you're in the hole if it goes up.
Because the thing is, when you're short selling, there's no limit to how much you could lose. Like, say you were like, this stock sucks. I think they're going to, you know, go to zero. And then they go from 100 to 10,000. Like, you're like, oh my God.
Then you're screwed.
And you're screwed.
But there's some famous ones like Enron. And there was another one that there's some people with a lot of money that are like, I fucking hate these people. So I'm going to short sell them to try to move the market too. Right. Like, and that happens. So if there's enough people short selling, it pulls the stock price down, right? Essentially, it says there's these sell orders out there and you're trying to buy. And when people look at that, they're like, wow, there's a huge sell order. I'm not buying this thing for anything. And it just keeps dropping. On
following the trend. Yeah.
Right. So you're betting on that thing to tank.
Yeah. So again, if you were shorting the stock, right now it's at 198. You think it's going to go to 178. So you're like, okay, I am going to short it at this price. And then if, you know, whatever it goes to, say you have a price target of 178, it goes down to that. You would then basically buy it at 178. So the difference,
right?
You got to buy, I think you have to do it lots of 100, maybe 10.
But your promise, I think it's lots of 100. You got to buy lots, which are 100 shares at a clip, right?
Yeah.
But so you're buying it back, having borrowed that initial buy, right? So the idea is you're making money because you call everything in and it's like you paying back the loan and you're buying the stock and you're making the money in between, right?
Right. Yep.
Weird. It's a tough concept, but like technically you're not allowed to short it when it's on the down. So you got to buy it on an uptick or...
I don't think so. I don't know about that exactly. I just know the generalization that you're.
I gotta find that out. Because if something's dropping like a stone, that's like jumping on. Like, I can jump on. Like, this shit's dropping.
But I think you also need people who will sell to you at that point.
Yeah.
There might not be any availability. Because there always has to be. Because for every buyer, there's got to be a seller. So
yeah, there's a flat. Yeah. And then there's market makers, which I don't understand either. They have to buy to control the price from dropping like a stone or rising like a stone. It's like weird shit. They buy or sell. Yeah,
that's kind of like real world interest, I guess, in the company.
I don't even know.
Yeah, that's just, that's beyond my knowledge. Yeah.
But anyway, so Vail for you is a sell recommendation.
I would, yeah. Boom. I mean, again, I would not follow my advice, but.
I like your advice. I'm going to follow Brian's advice. You're going to we're not going to be fool.com. We're going to be idiot.com. How about that?
Yeah, complete like, dumbass morons.com.
You have the worst stock advice for you. Yeah. So follow it because I'm going to bet against it because it's the worst idea, right? Like
exactly.
I was actually, it's funny. I was talking about, we were talking about stock not too long ago. I think it was yesterday with my wife. And I was telling her how, like, if you're a really unlucky person, you kind of want to know who that unlucky person is. Because the minute they buy a stock, you want to short it. The minute they short it, you want to buy it. Like, there's got to be people like that. Like a mush. You're the opposite guy. But, like, if you know that, you can use that to your advantage. So, like, luck is two ways. If you have good luck and bad luck, if you have bad luck, you manipulate it. It's essentially good luck, right?
Just saying. Two sides of the same coin, right?
Topsy turvy.
Luck be a lady tonight.
I had a topsy turvy that bitch.
Yep.
Topsy turvy. All right. This one I was trying to read before, but I got lost right away thinking about like the proportions of everything.
Is it because it's in meters?
That plus the fact that it's really far. So yeah. There's a ski jumper that broke the world record, did 290 with a 291 meter jump. So 27-year-old broke the record on an improved jump venue in Iceland. And frankly, you need to watch this to believe it. And they have a video and the guy looks freaking amazing. So it's Japan's Ryo Kobayashi shattered the ski jumping world record this week by taking to the skies and literally soaring 291 meters. And what's that in American?
Almost 600 feet.
600 feet.
Did you watch the video?
Damn. I watched part of it. I did not watch the whole thing.
It's only 30 seconds. You got to.
Yeah, but I'm always afraid they're going to crash at the end and it's going to be like Wild World of Sports.
No, it's going to be all right. The crazy thing is the whole thing is that the FIS did not recognize the jump as a world record.
Where was that? That wasn't like a wow.
Was it in Finland? Oh, Iceland.
It's Iceland.
Yeah.
It's very cold and icy.
According to the rules, ski flying competitions are required to follow an FIS certified distance measuring system. They must take place on an FIS approved hill and materials must be tested by an FIS certified equipment controller.
Skis,
passive suit.
I hear somebody has somebody has to get paid and somebody has to get paid again.
Exactamundo.
Somebody's got their hand out saying, I got to certify this. Give me some money. I have to check these skis. Give me some money. They're not free. People don't work for free. They don't travel, get put up in a really nice hotel, get their per diem.
Waldorf Astoria next to the resort.
That's right. With full per diem, expenses, car, translator. It's, you know, this is the cost of getting a world record, right?
I love how Red Bull's like, hey, here's your medal. You win. You're the best.
Red Bull's like, fuck you. People respect us more than the IOC. The IOC, I laugh every time about the guy from The Onion. No, that was the...
That was FIFA.
That was FIFA. The IOC was a different scandal because like they were taking flat-out bribes for where they were hosting, right? It was like, yes, we'll have Qatar because we got a bag of cash.
Yeah, well, I thought it was FIFA also because that was the World Cup.
It was. FIFA was the guy with the onion. So he was holding up the onion article. I fucking love that real guy. News. He was from like Nigeria or Congo, like somewhere. It was some African country, and he was just like, I love that guy. He was like, hi, see? The American papers like believe us. It's like, that's the onion, dude.
So did you finish watching this yet?
Yes, it was pretty awesome.
I mean, the fact, like, how long he's in the air. So he launches around 9 seconds.
But was that, so they're saying it wasn't official place, officially whatever, but like, was what he jumped off of an actual ski jump? Because it almost looked like the side of a hill that was just graded a certain way.
They modified it or something. You know, I think you really can't capture the size of it in the video just because of the angle, but he was in the air for I think 8 seconds.
But it looks like a part on the side of a hill, which is pretty freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's the reason why it's like not part of the, like, it's not an official track. Yeah, it's like a right. You're right. It's like an actual ski resort. They just kind of dug out and, you know, carved it.
So I'm wondering, did they like carve it out, and is it not official because they don't recognize that as a, because I've never seen a ski jump that's not one of these man-made created like slopes to start off and then go on to, this was all completely like, this is better. I love watching ski jumping like that. That seems like more natural. Like
it's almost like you took a really steep trail at your local ski resort and then just built the little, what do you want to call
ramp
it?
At the end.
Ramp part at the bottom. And just sent it down the trail.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But I mean, the how long? 291 meters. He was in the air for, I think, 8 seconds.
It was a good jump, though. Like, he had his whole form going, like, just flying. It was like,
I mean, just hold yourself in that position with that much speed at that, for that length of time, is just, like, it's pretty sweet.
If you haven't seen it, think of this, right? Like as we keep going on with wealth and just like exposure to stuff and just like just the world and like technology and developments, right? We're doing things that like our parents didn't even think were possible, right? Mm-hmm. And every generation is going to keep pushing. So now you have like, you know, people skydiving, like just doing like more extreme stuff, like as a group, like, hey, what are you doing? Well, we're doing this, like kind of just as commonplace. When do you think people are going to be like, what are you guys going to do? Well, we're going to hang out by a fire pit, chill out for a little bit. Then we're going to a ski jump and we're going to jump a few times and then we're going to hang out in the hot tub. Like that's a night that instead of bowling, you're going to do ski jumping for a little bit. That would kind of be cool. You want to do karaoke or ski jump? What do you want to do tonight? Right? That'd be kind of nice. Kind of interesting, though, because it depends. People start adding alcohol. I'm just waiting for, now they have the All Drug Olympics, which is very funny to me. I think of the old Saturday Night Live.
The All Drug Olympics.
Skit where.
Oh, yeah. Isn't there like a word? We're not testing for any performance enhancements.
Right. Well, they let you use performance. There's some they don't want you to, but I don't think they test. Like it's this weird thing. You sign waivers and there's a lot of people that are ex Olympians or ex like competitive athletes that are past their quote unquote prime in their sport. And they're like, yeah, I'm going to take something and I'm going to start
steroids and get jacked up.
And I think they banned some of like the bad ones, but like, I don't know if you'd be coked up and just like go running. Like, they'd probably be afraid your heart's going to explode. Like,
no, let's just do it in Dubai.
He's amazing at ping pong. Like, you have to be on coke to play ping pong. I don't know how they move that fast.
Adderall and coke, yeah.
That's right. Just some new chemical they're going to create. Like, this makes you work great. You got to stare.
When the weightlifters, like, chalk up their hands before a lift, like, it's all just coke.
Just steroids and coke. Oh, yeah. Woo!
Just kickboxers, just like die.
Oh my god, like boxing or you gotta get the announcers like, I don't know if that's resin or like, did he snort that or use that for the bar? They're like, both, Dan. Yeah, But how about alcohol Olympics? Like, why not? Like, I want to see you.
That's good.
I
want to
see you do. I want to see you do laps around a track and drink a beer every time you do a lap. How many laps are you doing?
Like gymnastics. They do a shot before.
Oh my God. They do a funnel before like the floor exercise. It's just like power vomit everywhere.
People just like crash into the pommel horse. Like just
running straight right into that thing. Bam.
Like figure skating, like pairs figure skating, doing a couple shots.
Oh my God. They would drop so many people.
Just like chuck her.
Chuck her like into the stands. Like, I don't know, man. I was hammered. Sorry, man. My fault.
This was a terrible idea. Who thought of this?
Somebody sitting on his yacht going, ha ha, motherfuckers.
George Soros probably thought about it. He wants to see everybody fail and die.
But the problem is, he would want you to fail, but you would get so many viewers, people like, it's on again next year, even bigger with sponsorship.
Like you thought Wipeout.
Yeah, everything would be sponsored. Yeah. Like the
DraftKings.com something.
Yeah. Oh, it's all by DraftKings. And you can bet on yourself too. Like that would be.
We would encourage you taking all of your winnings, betting on yourself.
All alcohol, and you can bet on whatever you want, right?
No.
Try to fix it. You're not going to be able to.
Well, speaking of fixing things, Marcel Hirscher, who retired from skiing at the top, is back. Not only is he back, he is now racing for a country, no mountains. Yes, you heard that right.
One
of the most successful ski races of all time is planning to return next season after 5 years in retirement. The record 8-time overall World Cup champ is going to compete for the Netherlands, his mother's country, instead of his mother country, which is his native Austria. The Austrian
sports pick something random like Brazil. I'm gonna be a Brazilian ski racer.
There was actually I'm not sure if you know what in this same story. There was a Norwegian skier whose, I guess, mother was Brazilian, and he's going to start skiing for Brazil now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Austrian Winter Sports Federation, known as OSV, announced Wednesday that it had released the 35-year-old Hirscher and endorsed his nation change. For people asking, why are you doing this? For me, it's clear. Because the joy of skiing never left. It's just so much fun for me. Said on Instagram, while there has been Dutch skiers who have competed on the elite level, never has the Netherlands, a country with no mountains, had a top ski racer anywhere near Hirscher's caliber. The nation change allows Hirscher to compete on Van Dier skis, the brand he helped create with Red Bull, his sponsor. Van Dier is not on the list of brands approved for use by the Austrian Federation. It's insane the levels of control these little stupid organizations.
That's when he looks at him. He's like, "You guys are saying you wanted to keep me, and you won't let me ski on these skis." Like,
to have the best ski racer, you're not going to let him get. You're not going to find a way to find approval to get him so he can use the skis that he created. Like,
yeah, that's crazy, right?
Better and easier for the Dutch Federation to put this project into practice. Hirscher said, for me personally, it was important not to take any resources from young athletes in Austria, which is, you know, kind of a nice way to say it. Then they said, we regret the decision, but it was his choice. We support it, blah, blah, blah. So he was raised in Austria to an Austrian father and a Dutch mother, Sylvia. His father, Ferdinand, coached him throughout his career. Patrick Rimmel, Red Bull ski racing director, said that Hirscher's plans to enter low-level races in New Zealand in August and get the necessary points to return to the World Cup circuit, and that his main aim is to compete at next season's World Championships in Saalbach Hintergelm, Austria. He's been training the whole season. He's been on snow pretty much every day of the winter testing equipment. So he's good to go. He's going to be doing the...
So then not letting him race on the skis that he helped create?
Well, he will now that he's skiing for the Netherlands. If he was to stay with Austria, he wouldn't.
See, that's funny.
He has 67 World Cup victories. Damn. So he was, I think, basically second behind Ingemar Stenmarks for the men.
Wow.
So he was at 67 in 2019. So he basically, I can't really do the math in terms of how much How many?
I think they don't want him to break Ingmar Stenmark's records.
Well, I don't think now he can. Yeah, well, now you got, you know, you got Mikhail with 97 wins. And, you know, he's kind of in his, probably in a decline now. Because, I mean, he retired at 30, 29. That's,
wow.
You know, he still had a, he had plenty of good racing in him. But, you know, you never know why people do what they do. They say what they say. But what's the real truth about it? But, yeah, he's back. And that's big news. And especially for Netherlands, like. It's cool that he's able to do that.
Well, it's funny, you know, you talk about them retiring at 30, right? So it's funny. I was watching something and they were talking about, they were talking to a, like a BMX racer or something like that. And kid was like 25 and he's like, yeah, I'm retiring. And they were like, what the hell are you retiring for? Like, what do you mean you're retiring? He's like, but I've been a world champion since I was 15. He's like, so I've been 10 years at this level. He's like, I just want to relax and not compete and do it. And I was like, wow, you know, you don't think about that. Like if you start super young, your childhood's gone because you're competing, you're doing all this stuff. Like you never had that chance to like do the stupid shit that most people do. And it's like, you were a pro for 10 years. That's a really long career. So if you did good with your money, like you're set for life. Like it's, it's interesting, like when you think about it like that, right?
Well, because you kind of always put your frame of reference over it, you know, because you think like, oh, I go to, you know, you go to college at 18, you graduate at 22, then you start a career and make money. It's like, no, that guy was for 7 years while you were dicking around in school, he was already a professional making money.
Best on the planet. Like, think of that. So think about Michaela Schifrin, how much she's won. She is what, 32?
No, she's like 28.
28, right?
27, 28. Yeah.
She, if she retires now, she has a fully loaded career done with her at 28.
Yeah.
Like, think of that. Cause she was like another one that was like 14, 15, right? When she was winning.
Yeah. When she started.
So it's kind of like, yeah, you put that into perspective. She's been doing commercials for years, endorsements. Go home, like,
retire, make some ski babies.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's going to happen. You get married, you want to have babies, like, you know, and it's good.
Yeah. Speaking of not good, though.
All right. Speaking of not good, we have auditor finds the state bungled oversight of J-Peak EB5 projects in massive fraud. So this is the gift that keeps giving for like interest.
I think we've been talking about this story since we started the podcast, like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it just keeps going. Like it just never ends. So state auditor Doug Hoffer released a 69. Why 69 pages? Couldn't you do 70? That's just, why do you got to come up?
No way, Dave.
Because you know he's one of those freaks. He's like, I'm going for 69. I'm cutting this down.
Girl, I want you to single space that last page.
That's right. Single space. You can abbreviate whatever you got.
How many pages we have? Down. We got 69. Nice.
Or is that like 67? It's like, we got to add a title and an appendix.
We got a double space. Where's that bibliography at?
That's right. I think we should add something to this. Let's add a glossary. Because I know people that think like that.
They're, I'm like, just a picture of me on the first page.
That's right. Are we going to have a picture section? I think we need to add some graphs. All right. So Doug Hoffer, the freak, released his 69 page.
Don't hassle the report. Hoffer.
On JP, I don't know. I always write says like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? There's a lot wrong with us. Let's put it that way. So he released his 69 page report on JP EB5 fraud last week. We're like 5 year olds. That finds state oversight of foreign investor funded projects in the Northeast Kingdom was marked by misplaced trust, unfortunate decision-making, lengthy delays, and missed opportunities to prevent or minimize the fraud. So the J-Peak fraud is largest in Vermont's history, which is, once that thing unfolded, I was like, this is big for for any state, but involve hundreds of investors from around the world who are offered a path to green card in exchange for $500,000 investment to create jobs in an economically depressed region of the United States. So this is kind of like, Brian, you had talked about like getting a passport in foreign countries. There's also how foreign people from other countries get passports for the U.S. And there are all these ways that people don't really realize until you dig into things like this. So this is a way for somebody to get a green card path to a very quick path to citizenship just by having money and throwing investment at something. So it was kind of, it turned into a Ponzi scheme. I think that's how they eventually got like caught and this whole thing investigated, because they were taking money from new investors to pay for stuff that was already supposed to have been paid by prior investors. It's kind of weird whole thing, but yeah, very sleazy. So they got this going on too. JP President Bill Stenger traveled the world to meet with investors, ultimately raising about $400 million for 8 projects at JP and Burke Mountain ski resorts, as well as in Newport. Federal prosecutors found more than $200 million of those funds were misused. So he raised 400 as like a scheme, and then he misused 200 million of those. So
with 37 million going to the pocket of Jay Peak's owner, Ariel Cruz.
And it was all kind of weird. Like it was all kind of illegal. Yeah. With 37 million ending up in his pocket. So how does that happen? I don't know. So Cruz attorney Bill Kelly was found to have received up to $4 million in investors' money that was not legitimately earned. Quiros and Kelly pled guilty to a multi-year wire fraud scheme and concealing materials facts in a matter within the jurisdiction of the federal agency. Quiros also pled guilty in money laundering. So there's a lot of charges. Right? Those are not small charges. That is...
So holy, I don't even shit. Understand. Like, so the whole $500,000 investment. So that's like a single person to get a single green
single
card?
Person, right? So if you have $500,000, you throw at the U.S. for some kind of investment. Now you could profit off of it, but it has to. I think we looked this up a while back. It has to employ a certain number of people. Like the idea is, you're investing that money in some kind of business to actually employ people. Then you're eligible to get that green card. So what they were doing was getting at least $500,000 from foreign investors to say, look, you want a green card in the US. Basically, I'm selling you a green card for $500,000 and you give it to us and we'll invest it in JPEAK. Right now, it's all legitimate based on the rules that are set in place. The problem is they were doing it and they were kind of not investing that money. They were just taking it. It's a loophole in the system that they're like, because I think when you were talking about even getting passports, getting citizenship in other countries, essentially, there were some countries where if you just flat out pay them like $20,000, you get like a passport. So you actually get citizenship. You don't even get it. Like here, you get a green card.
Yeah, it's like it's more than that. So usually between 150 and 250 for a family of four. Starts out.
For a family of four. And you were looking at, where was the one that seemed like the best deal or something?
St. Kitts.
Yeah. So to become a resident of St. Kitts, what do you got to do?
You have to be there 7 days a year.
And that's it. And then you automatically get citizenship.
You pay that fee, or you can invest in real estate too. That's another way to get a passport. I think it was again like 250 for a family of four, which isn't cheap, but
so if you buy a place there, you just do that, and then you could.
Then you got to maintain the place or rent it or however you want to handle that. It could be more. Yeah, it's possible. There's a lot of, this is the way like filthy rich people look at the world. They're like, what are the things that I like? We think about like, I'm going to get a cool watch, bro. That's like new money dipshit thinking.
That's right.
Wealthy people think about, how can I get more passports so that I have citizenship all over in case something goes down?
I got to hide money. I got to flee a country. Like, you're starting to think about like world order shit. You're just like, I don't want to live in this country because of the taxes. I could live in St. Kitts and pay one fraction of the taxes. With that much money, it makes a big deal.
Actually, El Salvador just announced if you can pay $1 million in Bitcoin, you can get citizenship there. Like, there's a lot of countries doing a lot of different things now to attract people.
So, well, think about it. If you're like, if you're a new up and coming country like Pretoria or something like that, you just tell people there's no taxes, you'll get a lot of people coming in.
I wish Andorra would offer something. Like, there's the problem is most of there's not a lot of really good ski countries that are offering citizenship.
So what if we take over ski country, like just a coup on like Andorra or Liechtenstein, I think might be good, ripe for the taking. Well, because then we could claim ourselves king of the place, right?
I think still think Canada would be easy to take over. I think like 15 people could probably do it.
dropping a few guys in blackface on.
Hey guys, here's some Timmies. Oh, thanks, eh? And just storm through.
Thanks, eh? I don't know. I wonder, like, Canadians really are proud of like what was the one conflict that they won? It was like us trying to take Quebec or some shit like that. Like,
no, it wasn't
major, but like they claim like, we beat the US.
Is that
like,
during the Revolutionary War?
No, it was after, I think. Yeah, I think it was after. And it was kind of like they consider themselves 1-0, like don't come back. And it's like, I don't know if you really fought the US that was formed. Like that was the new US, not like the real, like, I don't know. I think it'd be a different fight today.
Yeah.
They're too nice. They're like, sorry, I might have hit you with the bullet and just bam, you know, like
we're. I was during the War of 1812.
War 1812. It's 1800s.
Yeah. I'm
still going to cling to that.
The JP cannot put this thing to rest. It's unreal. Can't.
Yeah. It's a total shit show. They really have to do a documentary on this whole JP thing. Like, if they want like somebody to write it, we can collaborate. Oh yeah.
Right for a mini series.
I think this is a limited series of about 3 seasons hosted by Brian Amerio, the high.
It could be our first production.
Could be. We just want to contribute. We don't want to produce it. Like, well, we want the production money without putting the money in. How about that? That sound good? Sounds good to me.
It's like making Cleaver.
We'd have David Hasselhoff play Doug Hoffer.
Perfect.
Boom. Because he looks like, and he's got the Hoff. So I like that.
He's already Hoffing it. So that wraps up the good old ski news. So now we're going to go into the main topic. And this is going to be a pretty light topic, I think. You know, it's end of April, end of August. Jeez, messing up my end 8 months.
August? It's end almost of April. Ski season.
I'm trying to push through summer, trying to like get it out of the way, get it done. But
I already go through almost ski season. Like even my hashtags, it's all almost ski season.
Yeah. We're end of April now. So for a lot of us, we're thinking about wrapping the season up at this point and putting a tiny little bow on it and getting ready for the summer. And, well, you know, Mario, how would you rate your season in terms of what you expected to ski and what you actually did?
I give it one middle finger instead of two. One, right?
Just one.
I mean, I had a good time skiing. I went to Europe. I can't complain. It was good. It was good, but it was short, right? Like, so, and it's tough for me because I travel and travel's pretty tough and, started a new job, so that was pretty messed up. Well, started a new job last year, and it's just carrying over to this year with a lot of time taken away. But I tell you, it was a weird season up north. I would have gone up north, but then it was just kind of like, I don't know. And I had to travel a lot we were doing a lot of travel for personal. So I guess I gave it the one finger because I had a great time skiing while I did ski, but it was short. It was very short for me. And there was really not a lot of opportunity to go do like a quick, hey, I'm going to jump up to you know, up north and ski or something like that. But it looked like everybody else had an epic time. And I don't know if that's just the Instagram effect or where everybody posts all the great shit and you're just like, oh, wow, everybody had the most epic times ever. But who knows? How about you, bro?
You know, coming off of the season before, you know, where we did that New Hampshire trip and, you know, me and Andrew went to like a ski Vermont trip at Killington. I had really high expectations because they're like, oh, well, my daughter's three now. Aaliyah's three. Benjamin's six. These kids are prime, which is why I bought the Icon passes for all of us. Like, we're going to be there every weekend. We're going to be going to Camelback, Blue Mountain Local. Yeah. We got, you know, up in Vermont. We got Windham. We got a bunch of spots we can go. It just did not pan out at all the way I thought it would. December, like, we were sick basically snowbound into mid-March. Like, someone had something almost every day. I mean, it was we were just beat down. We were exhausted. People weren't sleeping. We made one trip to PA. Luckily, we did our Stratton trip. We luckily got good weather in Easter week and did our Killington trip, which was great because it was, you know, early in the week. But we did leave before the foot and a half of snow came because just timing wise, that was just the days that we were up there. Again, you play the hand you're dealt. You know, you ski as much as you can ski. You do what you can do. Yeah, I had these grand plans this year of what would happen. And, you know, we skied as much as we could. That said, the days that we had, like, I think back and like we had, you know, had so much fun. You know, I had only had one day on my own, I think, this year. And then a couple times, you know, we had kids in lessons. We were able to go and me and Andrea could go ski on our own. You know, awesome. I love skiing with her. We have a great time. It's just we didn't have enough of it. And we couldn't muster up the energy to do a big trip, just the two of us. I couldn't muster up the energy to go out to Colorado to visit, you know, my sister and Nick. It just didn't play out. It didn't pan out. And
all right, so one highlighting moment of the winter. How about that? Of the ski ski season.
So I would say I had a stupid moment at Killington. And
all right.
So you know at the top of the K1 gondola, it's where like Cascade. It's like Cascade and is it Double Dipper? When you go like you're walking towards the Peak Lodge, but you keep going and you can drop in right there on those two double blacks. I went and did those on the last day we were up there.
Nice.
And I'm like, they look pretty good. They were just, it was just dust on crust, man. It was just a little bit of snow on just frozen boulders. And it was just like,
That was interesting. Going down. Jump in. Yeah.
Yeah. I got through it, but it was ugly and it wasn't really fun, but I got through it. That's funny. You know, I started lapping the Canyon quad over there.
Oh, okay.
And I was ready for my last run down. It was probably like 3:30. Like, so, you know, the lifts were starting to, you know, they were taking the rope down and ready to close it up. So I'm like, I got one more ride down. I'm like, I'm going to take Cascade all the way down to go back to the lodge so I can ski down to Snowshed and go to the hotel.
Yeah.
The problem was I didn't take Cascade. I took Double Dipper and if you remember, double black, all frozen ice moguls.
I'm nice. Just
like, fuck. And my legs are just fried.
Guys, getting ready to do the rope is like, oh, you got to watch this guy.
There was a few other people on there, but I just been skiing with my daughter all morning. So my legs were killing me from skiing with her. And I'd done a bunch of like, you know, runs and was pretty fried. And I went and did that. And it was funny because I did that. And when I got down eventually, I had to stop a couple times because I was just legs were screaming, skied back down. And we were staying at the Grand. So it's right there at the base of the mountain, which is awesome. So I walked over there. I checked my skis. Family's there. And I was like, we went to, because the kids, the reason we picked the Grand even was because they have the heated outdoor pool there. Nice. And I knew the kids would love that because they're all about pools and water parks and whatever's watery. And then in that water, I was like, hey, kids, you see that trail there? Like, that's what daddy skied to get here. And of course, they're like, eh, whatever.
They didn't care. I've seen that before.
Yeah, we did try going to Sushi Yoshi right after that. And they're closed on Mondays, and it was a Tuesday that night. We couldn't even get it. You gotta make reservations for hibachi, which I have idea midweek.
Wow.
But, that sucks. Yeah, things you learn. But went to Casey's Caboose, and the kids got the owner gave them a tour of the train because you can actually like go up into the room where the front of the plow train is.
Oh, so cool.
He showed them that, which was pretty cool.
Nice. Very cool.
It was fun. I just, you know, man, I love it up there. So
it's nice fun. Just
getting up there. And
I can say there's a nice vibe up there. Even like off peak is nice. Very nice. Like it's kind of cool.
Midweek, you know, like, I mean, it was Easter week, but it really wasn't crowded at all. Like, it was really, and the conditions were great for being first week in April. Phenomenal condition.
So my highlight for me was we're on vacation, we're skiing in France, and usually it's tough going, you know, because my wife usually gets tired. She was worried about, like, you know, her bone, like she's worried about breaking something. Like, there's a lot going on. And she comes to me like midweek, like we're at dinner. And, you know, she went with her group, I went with my group, and we just kind of skied separate, and we meet, you know, at night, which is cool because everybody gets their day in. But, you know, we're trading war stories and just hanging out, having a good time. And she looks at me, she's like, you know, I started feeling confident skiing. And she's like, I really want to go again. Now, we still had a few more days to ski. And I'm like, well, we have a few more days to ski. She's like, no, I want to ski as much as I can the rest of the season. And I tell you what, for me, as like, if you're a girl, the hottest thing for your guy is going to be to tell him something like that, right? Like, that's the shit that I'm like, oh my God. Like, so you're saying I could ski with a buddy and my wife at the same time? Holy crap. Right. Like, that's what you want. It was good for me to hear. And just seeing that on her, like it made my trip. I was like, that's freaking awesome. Cause you know, when you see somebody getting it and they're like, I feel good doing it. I feel confident doing it.
And I want to do more of this.
And you're getting past your fear. I want to do more of it. You're like, you got it. Like, I want to fuel that flame. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Cause we've all had that. Like when I started getting the bug, like it's, and I smiled and I was like, you know, you got the bug, honey. And she's like, what do you mean bug? Like, I'm like, this is what they call it. Like, you know, you kind of all of a sudden you start getting the fever for, I want to go. Like when it's ski season, you start counting down
we're selling the house. We're getting a van. We're skiing every day. That's the plan. Put it on the market tomorrow. Yeah.
That's right. You know, like, it's like, wow. Like you're thinking in that same zone. So I was really like kind of surprised and very happy. And I was like, I kind of was thinking like, she's not going to like it as much as I do. And I was like, she's actually starting to like it in her own way, which is awesome. She's all for it. We booked December. So we are going to go for Christmas to Quebec and ski.
Oh, very cool.
Now, if there's no snow, we're still going to be in Quebec and we're going to do something, right? Like,
yeah.
And that's what you do with a ski trip. But I think we're going to look at ski clubs and maybe try to do something up north. I don't know. If our son, we become empty nesters, I think it opens up a lot more possibilities. So we'll see. Oh, yeah. And we're going to want to go see him if he is playing hockey somewhere in a nice cold destination, which would even be better. So we'll see. A lot very of nice. Kind of things up in the air, but there's a lot of hope. So I think it's
funny, you know, mentioning Quebec, you know, talking to Tim on Wednesday, we talked about how, you know, but Snowbound, they had that whole Quebec thing and they're like, oh yeah, come on up. We can get ski here. And then we talked to the lady from Club Med. They're like, yeah, you guys come up in March. I'm like, we even blew that. Like we blew all these free trips that they were offering. Like it just, we just couldn't make it. Like this was the year we couldn't make it happen.
The Club Med chick ghosted us. What do they call the area in Quebec? Is like the Western towns or something like that. They had a whole media trip and that would have been baller as hell.
Yeah.
But I was like, January, right? I couldn't do it with work. I was
based
like
on the timing of your trip too.
Yeah. And even, yeah. And I moved my trip like a few times, and then just even work, like even that time would have just been horrible. And I'm like, ah, it just killed me. So
the problem is because you have a job. This has to be your job. This is your job.
That's the problem. I got to just switch jobs.
Dedication to the game.
But actually they did say, I did reach out to them. I said originally that I was gonna, and then I was like, no, I can't get out of work or whatever. And she actually said, like, if we do want to go up there another time, let them know and they'll see what they can do. I was like, they're trying to promote the area. So I think it'd be great. All that area is pretty nice. I mean, they're part of the Laurentians up there. So
I believe so. Yeah.
Very cool. Like, and you've done Tremblant before, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's part of that area. I think it's called the Western Township, or what was it called?
Yeah, there's a lot up there. Is it Sutton? Mont Sutton. Yeah, it's one of them.
Yeah, Charlotte, Mount St. Anne, Le Massif is the other one.
Yeah, they made it sound like it was, I mean, they had a lot of stuff going on there, which was cool too. But again, the Northeast, the ski season was a little, there was good snow early, and then there was patches of just, like in January, February, there was times where it was really not so great. I mean, I talked about it on the Stratton recap. You know, we were there the first or second Saturday in February, which is usually around the peak coldest times of the season. Yeah. And it was 50 some degrees and pouring rain that day. Like it was around 4 o'clock, the rain started, thank God. So we're off the mountain, but just dumped, like for an hour, just dumped, and then dropped to 20 degrees that night.
Damn.
Again, that's East Coast skiing. I get it, but it still sucks when it's like the week you're away. But again, you play the hand you dealt. All you can do. It's all you can do.
Yeah.
And just get used to skiing on that kind of ridiculous freeze over.
Oh, yeah.
Uncomforted.
The Frozone.
Frozone, yeah.
So I did find it. It's the Eastern Townships. I don't know why I'm thinking the Western Townships.
I was way off.
Yeah, way off.
Samsonite.
The other direction. Samsonite. Yeah, so it's like between Montreal and Quebec, the Eastern Townships. It is, it's a lot of good ski areas in there. Wow, National Geographic has it listed as like a whole bunch of stuff going on there.
I don't know. What would you rate your season at? 1 out of 10.
1 to 10, I'd rate it at, so let's see, below 5 is just shitty skiing everything, right? Like I had good skiing for a short amount of time, so I'd say judging the overall quan that I got out of skiing this year, I would say it's probably about a 6.
Yeah.
6, maybe 7.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking more like a 4.9, 4.8. It's just, you know, there was opportunities. Some were blown.
The conditions. Yeah, but I'm not looking at the missed opportunities. Like I was trying to desperately go to Tahoe with our buddy Steve, because like we were just trying to go last minute. And the ski club was like, we got one spot, then we don't have a spot. And there was like, I'll reserve a spot. And then we can't, like, and then at the end, it's like, yeah, we could have gone. And I was like, no, I already made my decision. I'm done. You know, yeah. I kind of threw in the towel on the ski season. I'm like, fuck it, I'm out if I can't get on that. So there was opportunities or places I want to go. But what I did, I was like, I didn't do enough skiing, but I'd say a 6 is good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
it wasn't bad.
You know, I had lofty goals, and I'm sure I'm gonna have lofty goals next year. And if I achieve them, great, but it's unlikely. But I am going to always have lofty expectations of myself and what we do.
You should have.
You should. You gotta have a high bar. Otherwise, what's the point of any of this?
You gotta set high goals, stretch goals. I'm gonna ski 3 times as much as I did last year, right?
Yeah.
That's how you turn impossible dream, impossible goals into unbelievable realities, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we do what we can, and we're going to keep doing what we can. And it's, it's going to be an interesting off season. It always is. I got a lot of things we're going to work on the website and change things up a bit. Maybe on the podcast, we got to do some tweaking, I think, for next season. Yeah. And see if we can find ways to make it a little more interesting and get some more people.
Dial it in next year, and I think people are going to be surprised.
I think so.
Our sponsors are going to be surprised. Let's put that.
Yeah. They're going to be surprised they are sponsors. That's okay. That's right.
And or they'll be surprised they're not sponsors, right? Like, yeah. Both ways, top story. Yeah.
We do what we could, and we're going to stay positive, and we're going to have another great season next season. But, you know, we're going to keep doing the podcast in the summer because we got a lot of things to talk about. And
oh, yeah. There's a lot going on still in the ski world.
Like, I'm annoyed and pissed at the season, but I'm also not. I'm trying to find harmony in, you know, you do what you can. You know, there's no sense getting upset. You play the hand you're dealt, and you move on.
Oh, yeah. Well said.
Yeah, so I guess it's going to wrap up the old podcast for the week. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. Check us out, skibumpodcast.com. We are on the socials, X, Instagram, Facebook, Untappd, YouTube, at skibumpodcast. You like what we're doing? You want to help us out? Go to Patreon, patreon.com/skibumpodcast. There, you can join us on our journey to become the greatest ski podcast ever created. Also, do you need gear for the summer? You're going to be in better shape for next ski season? 10,000.cc. Use the code BeachNighter15 for 15% off. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Stay high, stay flutin'.
See ya.